Hi, it's Greg and Lucky.
And this is our podcast. If you don't catch us from 5 to 9, this is what you missed.
Forbes always putting out lists of the richest this and the richest that, and they have their 2024 list of celebrity billionaires. A little early in the year, I think, already to be declaring these people the richest of the year.
Right, yeah.
But
unless you're going by the quarterly updates.
I guess. Top of the list, George Lucas, richest famous person.
Yeah, he's done all right.
$5.5 billion.
Really? Now,
at the bottom of the list, and I thought this was interesting because of the year or two she's had, is Taylor Swift. Now, she's at $1.1 billion.
That's the bottom of the list?
Well, it only goes, yeah, they only have like 14 people on the list.
Okay.
Although there's some ties here, too. So maybe it adds up, if I did the math, maybe it adds up to the top 20. But, yeah, that would put her, like, if it was the top 20, that would put her at 20.
Right.
So tied are, like, LeBron James, Magic Johnson, and Law and Order creator Dick Wolf. They've just got $1.2 billion.
Okay.
Tiger Woods has $1.3. That's why he needs that Happy Gilmore 2 cash.
Yeah, that's right.
Need some help. Tyler Perry and Rihanna, $1.4 billion. What is it that Rihanna has done?
She's got a makeup line, too.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, cosmetic line. Remember, she was using the, just like paused during the Super Bowl show to use that cosmetic.
Oh, did she?
Oh, yeah. She's done all right.
Director Peter Jackson, he was the man who did that 9-hour Beatles.
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings as well. Yeah, 1.5. Kim Kardashian worth 1.7.
Yikes. Billion.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Jay-Z at 2.5, Oprah at 2.8, Michael Jordan at 3.2, and Steven Spielberg at 4.8. So George Lucas topping that list. There is yet another celebrity who's getting dragged because of his association with Puff Daddy. Now, it's been a tough couple of years maybe for Ashton Kutcher, but you guys could argue that it's all been self-inflicted. Because remember, a while back, he and his wife Mila Kunis got in trouble for writing letters of support for convicting
Danny Masterson.
Yeah. Now he's getting in trouble because of his association with Diddy, who's facing charges of rape and sex trafficking. This story is absolutely crazy. Like, Diddy is, you know, when it happened to R. Kelly and there's some others, you're like, okay, well, sure, he was a celebrity, but Diddy is huge. Like, he's a big, big deal in the entertainment industry.
Oh, yeah. He's a music mogul.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be like Quincy Jones getting dragged down.
Right.
So I guess Ashton and Diddy have been friends for decades, ever since Ashton was hosting Punk'd on MTV.
Okay.
So that already doesn't look good, but a video just resurfaced that definitely makes things worse. Back in 2019, Ashton was on Hot Ones, you know, the wings show on YouTube.
All right, yeah.
Everybody sits and eats hot wings.
Uh-huh.
Buddy of mine recently did that. They had a bunch of people over for just an evening of fun, and they copied
the
Hot
challenge?
Ones. Yeah,
oh, wow.
Yeah, that'll be a fun little evening. Make sure the bathroom is ready.
I say, hope he has multiple bathrooms.
Yeah. So back in 2019, Ashton was on Hot Ones, and the host asked him if he had any stories from his many Diddy parties he attended. And he replied, "I got a lot. I can't tell." Then he paused to think further and said, "Nope, I can't tell that one either." And he never did tell a party story. He just diverted into talking about their friendship.
Right.
Yeah. So now Mila and Ashton are trying to distance themselves from this chaos as much as possible.
Yeah. I mean, this is always tough because, I mean, we love to build up celebrities and then tear them down as quickly as possible. You know, but we all have a lot of friends or acquaintances and we don't know what they do in their alone time or when we're not with them. You know, you could very well go over to someone's house and they're very nice people and they host a nice party and have food and drink or whatever. You don't know what happens in the downtime in between that. If you do know and don't say, that's a completely different story.
I'm sure Hitler was a lovely fella sometimes.
Well, I mean, to a different degree. You know, but, you know, people come out later like, "Oh, I always knew it." And there was something you probably didn't know.
Well, I would only say this. I think that in a community that can be as small and tight as celebrities, I would think if Ashton and Diddy had been friends forever, there's a chance somewhere along the way Ashton heard something or saw something.
Right.
I mean, you can't hang with somebody for that long.
Yeah, but you don't know how much they were actually hanging. You know what I mean? Like, he went to a few parties of them. And I'm not trying to defend Ashton Kutcher specifically here. I could care less. And if he was involved with it and he knew about it, then he's just as guilty.
Sure.
And in the wrong. But I'm just saying, there are a lot of people with skeletons in closets that you probably don't know about and could be acquaintances with them.
Yeah.
You know, we're so quick to judge, and I'm not saying that he shouldn't be judged if he's committed crimes. Mm. What I'm saying is that we're very quick to pounce and say, well, all of these people who are associated with them because they hung out in the same circles. I mean, in Hollywood, everyone hangs out in the same circles trying to just get noticed. It's if you know that stuff is going down.
It's also based, too, on our personal opinion of people.
Right.
The photos of Epstein with Trump, if you're a Trump hater, immediately you're going to say, well, of course he's as guilty.
Right.
It's the same way how on the right, when they would say, well, there was photos of Clinton and Epstein together.
Yes.
Well, if you hate Clinton, then he's guilty as well, right?
Yeah.
If there's the photos of Ashton Kutcher, you could really care less. If it was photos of him and Tiger Woods, Diddy and Woods hanging out together, you might be more quick to defend. Well,
right.
He wouldn't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it comes down to, I don't like rap music, so, he's guilty.
He's got to be, there's some interesting connections between celebrities, for example, and not just outside of, like, working together or hooking up, but Elton John is Eminem's AA sponsor.
Really?
Yeah.
I know they were, they did that song together, right? Mm-hmm. They did Stan. And then he did a great performance as well. I think during the Grammys or one of the music award shows that they'd done together. And it was really kind of a powerful union in the sense that, there was talk about, gay rights and that sort of thing with Elton and whether or not Eminem, was some of his songs kind of, pushed against that, but then they appeared together and it seemed to be all good. And it turns out, I think Elton John has mentioned, they have a great friendship.
Yeah, it even goes back to Elton and Axl Rose working together when Freddie Mercury died and they did do that tribute concert. It was around the time that Guns N' Roses, and I can't remember the song, One in a Million or whatever. It was very kind of homophobic and anti-gay, and there was a bit of a punch up between the two of them in the media, and then they gathered together on stage and sang and kissed and made up. Keanu Reeves met Dolly Parton when he was a kid because his mother made costumes for her, including her infamous Playboy bunny outfit.
Wow.
Mama also knew Alice Cooper, who once babysat Keanu. Cameron Diaz went to high school with Snoop Dogg, and she's pretty sure she bought weed from him.
I've heard that one before.
It's a good one. Ed Sheeran slept on Jamie Foxx's couch for 6 weeks when he first moved to L.A.
I've heard Jamie Foxx tell that story, too, yeah.
Martin Luther King Jr. paid the hospital bills when Julia Roberts was born because Julia's parents let his kids attend their theater school at a time when few programs would admit black children.
Really?
Yeah. And Samuel L. Jackson was an usher at Martin Luther King Jr.'s funeral. A year later, during a protest at Morehouse College, Jackson and others took the school board hostage. Problem was, Martin Luther King Sr. was on that board.
Oh.
Oops. Now, ladies, if you're with your man right now, pay close attention to the look on his face when we share this with you. Google just agreed to delete all the data they've been collecting from people's incognito searches.
Wow.
In Chrome.
Yes, they have data on that?
They've been tracking all of those.
Hmm.
Now, most people assume when they search for something incognito, usually porn, that it's confidential. But all it really does is not add to your own computer's search history.
Right.
There was some lawsuit that was filed in 2020 accusing Google of misrepresenting the type of data it collects from those searches. The lawsuit was settled last year, but details just came out in a court filing this week. They agreed to delete billions of data records from people's private browsing sessions.
It's amazing how all of this data is collected. Like, when you think back to original computers and, like, the hard drives that you had. Like, I know my dad had one computer that had, like, you could physically remove the hard drive like a disk, but it was a hard disk. It looked like a cart, like where you would just put these things in, and it would change. Basically, it would change it from like his work computer to a personal one, and I had one for like games, and it wasn't confusing everything. Now you just kind of can separate your drives if you wanted to and partition things, but you know they all had like 80 megabytes of space, like nothing. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, billions of gigabytes of space, and it's all like has to be physically stored somewhere.
Yep.
You know, we just think of things in the cloud. It's here, it's there, it's not affecting us, or you can put more on a stick that we have on our keychain than we ever had before in our home computers. But it still has to be stored somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of this data collecting for what reason do they need to collect everyone's search histories in incognito mode? But they were doing it.
Yeah, they've been doing it. And, you know, as much as we go on, and certainly recently with the carbon tax and gas price increase, and we talk about saving the environment, and we look at things like gas and all of that, the one world that still is just kind of like the wild, wild west is Silicon Valley and all that they're just allowed to get away with and do. There's no, you know, it's just growing so big and so massive so quickly that it's, you know, and certainly in the U.S. you see it because a lot of the people in government are seniors and it's, for most of it, is way beyond their comprehension. And even when Bitcoin was kind of the rage there for a minute, the amount of power that it takes just to keep this stuff all stored,
right,
it is not good either for the environment.
Well, and listen, those who are you know protesting against carbon taxes and all of these environmental powers that be, or look to this and say, as much as you look at Silicon Valley and how much they might be using in power, you know, take that into China and to Russia and the countries who are not doing anything about their emissions or environmental protections.
Yeah.
and yet we're paying for it.
Well, if you look at the pie graph, you can see like China is 3/4 of you know, the environment issues. And then, as you said, Russia, and we're just like a little spot in there. But I also, and it's just because, and this is just the way I think it works in politics, when somebody's been in office for a long time, eventually they just rub everybody the wrong way.
Right.
And it seems like that's where our prime minister is right now. But it is funny how up in arms we'll get about, you know, a new tax and a certain percentage. And then they'll say, well, it'll cost you $12 more to fill up your car.
Yeah.
Really? You're outraged over $12?
It's not even that more. It's a buck and a half.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah, but for a full tank, I mean.
Yeah. No, on a full tank, you're talking about 3 cents a liter.
Right.
It's not going to cost you $12. But, you know, yes, of course, people see that. And in this economy, how could I afford another $12 as we, you know, add another streaming service to our accounts?
Right, right. Yeah. You go have a couple of pints and tip out the waitress $6.
Yes, there are people that are hurting, but not everybody.
All right, here's a little scenario for you. A friend asks if they can borrow some money. You hand them some cash. They use it to buy a Lotto Max ticket, and they hit the jackpot.
Wow.
How much do they owe you? Now, people were asked, and it's interesting. The top vote getter was just the original cash. So if you gave him, like, $10.
Really?
That's
There's
just,
no way.
Especially a friend.
Yeah.
That seems just.
Well, especially if you knew what it was for. Hey, loan me $10. I need a lottery ticket. I don't have it on me. To me, that's a split.
Of the whole thing?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know that I'd be that generous. I think I would tip out generously.
Right.
Like to the tune of maybe 25, 30%. maybe 20%, maybe 18%.
Because the unknown factor here is when or if that would have been repaid had they lost.
The 10 bucks.
Yes. Well, you borrow 10 bucks to buy this lottery ticket. You don't win on the ticket. You know, are you giving that 10 bucks back the next day, the next time you see that person?
Right.
Or is this, you know, kind of water under the bridge?
Most seem to think, as I said, the top decision was the original cash. Excuse me. Everybody just seems to feel like if you want to give more, great, and maybe they should, but they're not obliged to.
I think for me, though, like if you were borrowing 10 bucks for me to buy a lottery ticket, I would expressly say, oh, we're splitting this.
Right.
I'll split it with you.
Right. We did that once, didn't we, with the Powerball in the States?
Yes.
Oh. Did I never tell you we won? Anyhow.
I can see by your lifestyle, you're hiding it well. It's the last 7 years has been a ruse to make me think that you're not fine.
Half of the winnings is next.
Yeah.
And then nothing. Can't imagine.
Nothing. Come on.
Yeah. I don't know.
Ghost them.
I guess if I borrowed 10 bucks off of you and I bought a lotto ticket and I won and you had said, you know, if you win, we're splitting this. Okay. That's on the table. But if you just gave me the cash and didn't say boo, cause maybe I didn't even tell you what I needed it for.
Right. Yeah.
I think I just tip you out.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't like you. So the tip would
don't worry. I wouldn't be giving you cash anyway.
As we age, are you still listening to the music you loved when you were a teen? And if you are, that's not a sign of immaturity. It's actually perfectly normal. A therapist says there is a thing called neural nostalgia, where researchers are actually finding that the music we listen to as teenagers binds to our brains differently than anything we've ever going to hear as an adult. That actually makes the music a great coping mechanism because it helps us get out of our heads and helps us connect to ourselves, makes us feel alive. The music we listen to at that age, say we're 13, 14, 15, becomes attached to our sense of identity. We are discovering music on our own for the first time when you're young and often through friends. We listen to the music they listen to as a badge of honor and as a way of belonging to a certain social group.
Interesting topic, since we just played, you know, Sabbath and Paranoid.
Yeah.
And it's one of the concepts, you know, behind, you know, this radio station and others. And, you know, Doug Elliott is one who championed that theory of that, you know, you still love the music you listen to in your teen years. And that's why, you know, although for the majority of us, that would be in the late 80s, kind of mid 90s. You know, there are still some who you want to hear that stuff from the 70s or grew up listening to it because their parents loved it too, right?
I think for me, working in this business has ruined it for me a little bit because, you know, like bands like Zeppelin and others who have had so much radio airplay, you know, there are certain songs like Rock and Roll or Stairway to Heaven, Black Dog, that I just never, ever need to hear again. Now, that being said, I loved Led Zeppelin when I was first introduced to them. And so occasionally I'll find a playlist and I'll listen. And some of it, I'm like, oh, man, I haven't heard this in forever. Like, at least it's something I just haven't heard over and over and over again. And we've had this argument certainly early on when you and I first started working together. The rock was more classic rock based.
Right.
And it's evolved since then. And so with that, you'd get a lot of listeners who hated the new stuff we were playing. And I used to say, look, if I said to you, all you can ever eat is scrambled eggs every day for the rest of your life, would you be fine with that? So why is it you just want to listen to the same songs over and over and over again?
Well, and I think that's a difference for me. I obviously gravitate or I do feel nostalgic to the music of the 90s.
Sure.
Because that was a real music discovery period for me in my teen years. You know, but I not to the point that some are where I can't listen to anything after that or respect any music that's been done since or everyone's a copier or whatever the hell the, you know, the argument has been.
Yeah.
It just so happened for me and, you know, I'm in my late 40s that you know, the early 90s, that grunge phase was really the one of the first departures. And when you get your own car and you get control of the stereo for a minute and, you know, getting away from my dad's Eagles and playlists of the mid 80s.
Air Supply.
Air Supply for sure. REO Speedwagon.
And yet, let me ask you this, because I know it's true for me. I grew up with my parents listening to Neil Diamond, and I love him to this day. So there probably is some part of you that when you hear an Air Supply song, it takes you back.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and it's funny because, you know, with everyone talking about this next Monday and this eclipse, like that Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart was probably like melted down because it was played so much, that record, by my dad. I remember it. And so I'm sure we're going to hear it ad nauseum on Monday, but that's just, you have, you have the, it hits you in the feels when you get that music. And even, you know, the Eagles were in town, what, a couple of weeks ago and they've seen people posting clips of it and they, I could care less if I ever heard Take It Easy Again, but I know my dad, when that Hell Freezes Over album came out, played the hell out of that because it reminded him.
I will agree with you. I, you know, the Eagles music, there's some songs that I still love, but, yeah, enough is enough. And any other thing too is you lost like half the, you know, you lost Glenn Frey.
Right.
You know, at some point, I mean, really, it's Don Henley and Glenn Frey. I really am shocked they even carried on.
Well, honestly, though, in watching some of the footage from that show, Vince Gill was phenomenal. He's kind of taken over, right, for Glenn Frey, and he really led the way in a lot of those songs. Great guitar player, great singer. He was really good.
But it's also kind of why we mock bands like Lynyrd Skynyrd, right?
Yes,
the whole band is like, there's one guy, well, maybe not even one guy anymore. It's completely turned over.
Right.
Maybe a couple of times.
Right. But and there's been others too, like the Commodores and the Temptations and this kind of thing where you come back and you're like, is there still an original anywhere in there?
Yeah. Like, I mean, at what point does a band, and you could, I guess, use the Stones because of them being at the age they are. Like, do they, okay, so they lost Charlie Watts. They're carrying on. They released a new album. Like, if Keith Richards or Ronnie Wood, probably if Ronnie Wood died, they'd still carry on because it's still Mick and Keith.
Right. Yeah.
But if Keith drops, does Mick go get another guitarist?
Well, it would be like McCartney still parading around as the Beatles.
Right.
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 With or without Ringo.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it would still be, it wouldn't be authentic, obviously.
Yeah. I will say this about the Eagles. I find them to be incredibly boring live. They just stand there and play. And if you're into the music.
Right. Yes.
But there's something about their sound. I have a DVD, a concert DVD. It is the greatest sounding concert DVD I've ever owned. Yeah.
Well, a lot of it is harmonies, right?
Yeah, some in the mix.
Well, there's what, five or six of them across the stage, but they're all harmonizing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that has had an effect on music when you look back to the Beach Boys, who were great at it, and others, Simon and Garfunkel, those, the great harmonizers of the day, always put out really good albums.
Yeah, no, for sure. I also just think there's something in the mix where they, because if you've got like DTS or any surround sound system, you're getting like saxophones coming out of one speaker and a guitar riff in another.
Right.
When I'm stoned, it's amazing. For Wild Fork in Whitby, it's Theodore Reeder, the godfather of the grill. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning, Craig. Good morning, Lucky.
Teddy, how are you?
I can't complain, you know?
No.
You know?
But Teddy Reeder has nothing to complain about.
No.
The life is perfect. No. You know.
It's just fantastic.
That's right. That was thinking the other day about something I haven't had in a long time, and it was kind of a staple at the Venn Ranch when I was a kid, was the corned beef on Kaiser with mustard. It was just a bit of heaven on a plate, and I always thought it was odd and interesting because it was the only meat I knew of that you boiled. Like, I never saw that happen with anything else. I don't even know if they make it like that anymore. But when it comes to corned beef, or I guess, is pastrami like a corned beef? Is it the same idea? What is corned. Why is it called corned beef? And I'm assuming it's some sort of brisket, but am I wrong there?
You're making me use my brain this morning.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Holy smokes, it's hump day, man. I'm not ready for this kind of thinking. Corned beef is from the brisket.
Okay.
And corned beef is different from pastrami, which is also different from brisket, but it's all in the curing process.
Right.
Typically, corned beef, and if you find it in the grocery stores and places like that, it's already been injected with a cure. To one, to help tenderize, and two, to add moisture to it. And then you use a mixture of pickling spices to season it. Mm. If you're going to take a fresh brisket, you would take that brisket and you could use a needler to push holes into the meat, or a fork if you like, and then you make a brine with that mix of salt and water, bit of sugar in there if you choose, and then pickling spices, and there's usually mustard seed and peppercorns and some onions and garlic and some bay leaves and things like that that go into it, and you cure it and then you boil it. And so my dad was a newfie, and corned beef was a staple around the house. Mm-hmm. And he would then take that, and he would get a big pot, and he would take it out of the brine, and he would put it in, he would rinse it off, and he would usually let it sit in cold water for 24 hours to get a little of that saltiness out of it. So if you're buying one in the store, you can do the same thing, is just put it in a bowl of cold water, let it sit overnight, and then rinse it, and then drop it into a pot. Into the pot, you want to add some cabbage to add some flavor, some onion, maybe a bit of carrot, even some few cloves of garlic in there, and you bring it up to a boil, and you let it simmer. If you're buying store-bought ones, they say cook to 160 degrees internal temperature. That's misleading.
Mm.
And in terms of cooking instructions, they're doing what the meat processors and the packagers and the branding, they do what the Canadian Food Inspection Agency wants, is that you cook it to an internal temperature of 160 degrees. But at 160 degrees, if we've been smoking brisket, it is still tough at 160 degrees.
Leather.
You've got to take it up and let it simmer a long time until it gets to that internal temperature of just about 200 degrees. And then you can pull it out, let it rest, and then slice it, and you'll have beautiful corned beef. And then you take the cabbage that has all the flavor from the meat in there, and you have corned beef and cabbage.
Hmm.
And you can chop that up, and you can put it on a little rye bread and add a bit of mustard to it, and your rock and roll is golden. The other method you can do, if you're not using a pot and water, is you can use your crock pot, or you can use your Instapot and make it happen even faster.
Hmm. And it's interesting that you say, your dad being from the East Coast, that it was a staple in your home, because I've always just assumed corned beef and cabbage was very much an Irish thing.
Right.
And then the other thing I always just assumed was that corned beef was kind of more from the Jewish community, because all of the Jewish delicatessens would be serving corned beef on rye.
It's a meat that is universal, and if you eat beef, then corned beef is something that's pretty traditional, especially in that English culture, we'll say, and very much so. And you know, it's a delicious thing. I remember my dad; it was either corned beef or codfish and salt cod. We had a lot of that growing up as well. And then my mother would get in on the action and give you a spoonful of cod liver oil and ruin your day.
You know what was a staple in the Venn house growing up? Rye. And not the bread.
Goes good with corned beef, though.
And not the bread. Yeah, no. All right, yeah. Very good. Yeah. Any other questions about corned beef?
Well, my memories of corned beef are very different, because I think, you know, my parents being from the Caribbean, corned beef was always canned.
Okay, like spam.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Where you get a canned corned beef and you make that into like a corned beef and hash, basically.
Mm. Oh, right, a breakfast.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, corned beef and hash is pretty tasty.
Yeah, throw an egg on top.
Throw an egg on top of that, and you're having a good time.
Good time.
You
know,
and the great thing you can do with corned beef as well, have you ever put it in your grilled cheese?
No.
No. About that.
See?
Change up the cheese. Go with a little Swiss instead of the cheddar.
Okay.
All right. Uh-huh. Take a little bit of Dijon mustard, mix it with mayonnaise, and brush the outside of the bread with that.
That's my lunch.
And then fry it.
All right, Teddy, if people want to talk to you about corned beef or any beef or any grilling, how do they get a hold of you, my friend?
You're going to find me in the social media world at Ted Grills.
Rock Mornings with Craig Venn and Lucky. 94.9 The Rock.